And we're going to take your phone calls now with Kevin and Matthew Taylor. They're in Australia, wherever you may be. Get ready to go right here on Coast to Coast AM. Kevin, can you tell us where you can get the book, The Land of No Horizon?
At the moment, we don't have an American distributor, but you can buy it from our website. And our website is hollowearththeory.com. And in that, you can buy it through PayPal. At the moment, we're obviously interested in book distributors in America. If they're interested in carrying our book, to contact us, our details are on our website. And I guess they can also go through Coast to Coast as well and create a link to us from there.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take some phone calls for the rest of this hour. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, this is Gary calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for joining us.
Great. And I was wondering if you're familiar. I haven't seen this book in years. I just had to dig it out quickly. The book Secret of the Ages, UFOs from Inside the Earth by the author Brinsley. Lepoertrench.
No,
and this was printed in 1974. Okay. And this was printed by Pinnacle Books. And I picked it up at the thrift store a number of years ago. Eons ago, visitors from outer space came to this planet. They became god kings of Atlantis. They erected huge edifices around the world, some with 200-ton stones, and constructed giant tunnel systems in which to take refuge from both unstable seismic conditions prevailing in that era and attack from other ETs. When a major catastrophe struck and Atlantis submerged, many took refuge in these tunnel systems, and their descendants are still with us. And there are a number of pictures here that, I don't know, I wasn't there. I have an open but not a hollow mind, unlike the Earth. this shows ESSA 7 satellite photo taken on 23 November 1968. There's almost no cloud cover. The ice field on the surface can be observed, and the hole in the North Pole can be clearly seen. And there are a number of photographs here as well. And I was just wondering if you were familiar with this book or know anyone that might be.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard of this book before. It's possible that there's quite a few books that have been published in America, and as a result, because we're in Australia here, haven't had the ability to find them. So we're probably somewhat limited in that way in some of the books that we can, or that we have found during our research. But we definitely want to have a look at that and just have a look through and see what sorts of things it has and how it relates to what we've found as well. So, but unfortunately, no, I haven't actually seen that book before, but it sounds very interesting.
It seems, Kevin and Matthew, that of any work that might have been done about the Hollow Earth, it was done a long time ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yes, that's probably true. But I think today, with our technological advances and knowledge and so on, now we can actually add credibility to the Earth being hollow by using science.
Let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George. Thanks for taking my call. It's
sure
Bodo
thing.
From Ancaster, Ontario.
Oh, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Now, I have two aspects that I'd like to ask about. One is just the well-known knowledge that the deeper you drill into the earth, and as far as I know, there's a Japanese team that's supposedly going to try to make the deepest entry into the earth's mantle yet, and I haven't heard any more about that.
Right, and they have been working on that.
Yes, and I've heard about that as well, yes.
And the common knowledge about that is that the deeper you go, the hotter it gets. So, and that there's the obvious function of volcanoes with magma coming up and so on. Now, how do you handle that aspect? And the next question will be about gravity, if there's time.
Yes, we've actually, earlier on, we explained how we believe the Earth becomes externally dense as the planet grows. But one thing which we omitted to explain here, because we've only got so much time, is what we call the surface effect. Now, basically, the surface effect is the first portion of the crust where the material does actually get more dense as you travel down. And once you reach the base of this surface effect, then from that point onwards, then it starts getting less dense again. And obviously, when you're doing core samples and you're drilling looking for oil and that sort of thing, you do find it gets much more dense as you go down. But I believe once you get past a certain point, it will start getting less dense again.
And then and the cooler that you think, do you?
Yes. So I'm fascinated. I've heard about this.
There's an interesting point here, too, that in some of these deep holes, they've found that gravity reduces much quicker than it should. The zero gravity or center of gravity is assumed to be the center of the Earth, which we believe not to be correct.
That's the standard idea, of course.
But in deep sea trenches and some of these boreholes, they've found that gravity actually reduces at a much quicker rate than calculated by mathematicians. Which actually adds credibility to the Earth having a center of gravity much closer to the surface than the center.
Mm. I see. Now, let me ask just about gravity itself, if I can.
Yeah.
It follows from what we just said. The standard idea is that an object has a center of gravity central to its mass.
Mm-hmm.
And from what you've been describing, it sounds as though gravity is handled differently on the interior of the Earth, and that would be a little awkward from a classical idea, but it might go a ways towards explaining why UFOs can apparently outdo gravity effects completely from what we know.
Yes, I believe that the same rules of gravitation apply throughout both the inside and the outside of the Earth. I just think that we're not quite sure when it comes to observing gravity within a mass of a planet or the growing of a planet whether we fully understand what processes are taking place. And, of course, as I said earlier on, we actually don't know what gravity is. We can only study the effects. So with that in mind, I think there's probably a lot of things we don't fully understand when it comes to this. With gravity itself, there's a possibility that material or matter can actually shield other matter from gravitational influence as well. So all of these things need to be considered when we look at what gravitational effects there are inside a planet. But I believe that the mass of the shell of the Earth will attract a person or any object to it, just like it will on the outside, even though there's the mass from the other part of the planet on the other side pulling you in the opposite direction. Because the strength of gravity increases with the square of the distance, then you'll find that the closer you are to something, the much more gravitational attraction there is. And so when you're touching something, it's infinitely more closely to you than something on the other side of the Earth. So I'm sure that the same gravitational laws will work on the inside and the outside of the planet.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, George? My name is Luan Harris from White, Indiana.
Hi, Luan. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, my what I want to ask is a question, actually. There's these step formations in Japan. I was watching this on the History Channel, and there's a trench at the bottom of these steps, and they have these precise laser-cut L-shaped angles. That's why they call them like these steps. And at the bottom of this is a trench that goes way far down. I was wondering if any way possible that this could be like a portal to the hollow Earth.
Well, these sort of things are worth investigating. The problem in the past is because of the skepticism surrounding the hollow Earth theory, no one's been interested in following these things up. But if they've been cut by lasers, then we'd have to wonder about where the technology came from to produce them. And so this is worthy of investigation. As to whether it may be, see, the sea, after the Great Flood, the sea was much deeper, and a lot of the cities that were on coastal plains were flooded. And so some of these ancient buildings could have been involved with the inner people in their structure. And so it could be merely something like that. But it's very hard to sort of say without further investigation. I think with these sorts of things, it's probably better to sort of look at it and say, this is worthy of investigation, let's look a bit further. The trouble is people don't want to do that, and that's a bit of a shame. If we just get in and have a look, who knows what we might find.
Okay, great. Let's go east of the Rockies. Your turn. Where are you calling from? Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Where are you calling from?
Oh, yeah. I'm calling from Des Moines, Iowa. My name is Kelvin Robinson. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hi, Kelvin. Sure. Good. Go ahead.
Yeah. I had, one question and then a small story. The first question is a general question. And I'm not sure to which guest it is. I guess they both study the Hollow Earth, so to either one of them. Have you studied channeled information from people such as the High Priest of Telos?
Not really, no, no. I guess that we've sort of come at this, the Hollow Earth, from more of a geological grounding. And I guess one of the reasons for doing that is because we want to try and give the Hollow Earth theory credibility. And to talk about things like channeling and so on, science will tend to discount those things and then it, in a way that is discounting the Hollow Earth. And we believe that's wrong. But we want to try and show that the Hollow Earth theory is plausible and we need to investigate it more thoroughly. And so from taking that point of view and looking at things in a geological nature first and using that as our grounding, then I think we're much more likely to have it looked at in a serious light by the scientists. So these other areas, definitely areas that we need to have investigated, and perhaps other people as well would like to do that too, in light of the Hollow Earth theory. But just from our initial ideas, we thought that if we want to really give this credibility, let's look at things the way the scientists do and try and use their language and put things together so that they can see things in a practical way first. And then hopefully if we can win that battle, then we can do these things on top. And that's the way I'd like to see it go.
And Calvin, also, if eventually we do come to face to face with the people who created us, all these answers will be given us. And as I was saying earlier on to George, I don't think that's too far in the future.
Oh, without a doubt not.
No. Sorry?
I said without a doubt not.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't think we've got too long to wait. But what's going to happen is the Land of No Horizon is going to open up a virtual Pandora's box of amazing things. I mean, it may take us into another era of understanding that'll blow out in every direction, including channeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, and what was your story, Kelvin?
Oh, well, it was about astral travel. I used to do that quite avidly. And there was one time where I tried to telepathically communicate with that being I was talking about earlier, the High Priest of Telos. And I said, you know, if you guys are real or whatever, send me a ride. You know, pick me up.
Yeah.
And so I was dreaming and I was, you know, floating above my body, wasn't really doing anything, just chilling there. And then I hear a knock on my window and I look over and there's a Zeta Reticulan sitting there. And, like, I'm still in, you know, the astral plane at this point in time. And I just freak out, you know, because I'd never had an experience like that.
Right.
And then, like, I shoot right in my body. And then, like, as I wake up, I hear my dad, you know, closing the door. And we had an alarm system at that time. So if I was going to go outside, you know, that would have been the best time. But then later on, I realized that they wanted me to go with them, you know, via the astral plane.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, all this sort of thing can be looked at in a much more scientific light, which I think it needs. We need to start looking at all these different things, and we're trying to do that, and one step at a time. And I think and by looking at all these things in a geological fashion and doing that groundwork, we can then put all these pieces on top, and who knows where it'll lead.
Okay, let's go west of the Rockies. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Johnny Jude.
Johnny, where are you calling from?
From Fairbanks, Alaska.
Okay, Johnny, go ahead.
All right, well, you pretty much clarified your geological thing, which I respect immensely. And I already had things jotted down here: Atlantis, Lemuria, yeah. Loch Ness, Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all
yes.
these. The Kachina from the Hopi people. Mm-hmm. And I guess you're not really exploring that. Like you said, you want to get a base scientifically.
Well, Johnny, what one thing that happens with the Land of No Horizon is it's such a massive area of investigation. The more we investigated, the further and further we went, and the huger and the more research that was required, and we could have kept on going. So when it came to things like Bigfoot and these various things, we felt, well, we've got to sort of put a boundary somewhere as to how far we're going to go with this research. And
well,
so we didn't go quite
up and down.
Sorry?
From that Hollow Earth. The source has come up in the Andes, according to Shirley MacLaine and other people.
That's definitely those sort of things are definitely possible. I'll just put you to Matthew.
Johnny, you mentioned Atlantis. We do actually mention Atlantis in our book.
You do.
In the process of the flood occurring on the Earth, the end result of that was that the ocean was much deeper on the outside,
And we believe that there's a very strong case that the Atlantis city was once on the continental ridge running down the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, which is now below sea level, but before the flood was actually above the sea level. I think it's a very strong case for that. And so we do mention it in the book. But again, as Dad was saying as well, this is something that we really need to do more investigation on. We know that there's lots and lots of sand on the continental on the mid-Atlantic ridge, which indicates that it was above sea level at some stage, because sand does not form on the bottom of the ocean. It forms from coastal erosion. So that's something where we can definitely find out a bit more information and try and pinpoint perhaps the exact location that Atlantis once was. But as for some of these other things, again, so many things. We had to draw a line and just do what we could. And in fact, one of the hardest things was finishing the book. And we were writing this book for more than 12 years, and eventually we just said, okay, let's just publish it, because we could go on forever. And so that's what we did.
That's right.
Hey, I believe with some scientists who are beginning to believe that oil is abiotic, that this planet forms it itself. In your work for the Land of No Horizon, did you come across anything in terms of oil and how it's formed?
I believe that oil is definitely formed from life in the past. And in the most likely case, I would say, is that as the Earth's been developing and in the past when life was perhaps more primitive, there's always been meteorite impacts, and the result of these impacts is caused tidal waves or washed life and piled it up and buried life. And this has been compressed and it's forming oil deposits as well as coal deposits and so on as well. And I think the history of the Earth, I mean, the Earth has been around, it's just the crustal history of the Earth has been around for 4,000 million years, and that's an awfully long time. And during that time, I'm sure there's been plenty of cataclysms and events that have taken place, as well as the things that have been happening recently, like Earth expansion or the Great Flood. And all of these things can help explain, for example, oil deposits or coal deposits. I haven't heard the theory that the Earth itself creates the oil, but that's definitely an interesting one.
We're always open to new information, no matter where it comes from.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of scientists who are beginning to jump on board. And, of course, you still have the camp, the traditional camp, that believes oil was formed from dead dinosaurs and plants and vegetation. But you've got a lot of other ones now beginning to say, no, that's just not true, especially when they're beginning to find oil reserves now thousands of feet underneath the ocean, for example.
Yes, that's right.
Which is hard to imagine, because the ocean is a recent development in the last 200 million years, and you wouldn't imagine that there would have been great cataclysmic events to bury things that far down.
And how did the dinosaurs get down there if that's where oil is created?
I suppose the only way that could be explained is if suddenly another lot of matter came into the Earth and increased its volume and buried life, but... Well, gee, that's getting a bit on the outer edge. It's just sort of supposing ideas. It's really difficult to prove.
This really highlights the fact that you need to have lots of different people who can investigate different areas. And see, Dad and myself, we have slightly different interests, and we overlap somewhat, but we tend to go out and explore the areas that we find the most interesting. And there's areas like this which other people find interesting as well, and we can all contribute and come together and end up working on a theory all together and piece all these pieces together.
All right, stay with us, Matthew. We'll be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're not an After Dark subscriber, there's not too much time left to take advantage and get the free CD called Perfect Possession. Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin. Call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. Get that free CD when you subscribe or renew the After Dark newsletter. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let's go right back to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Kevin and Matthew Taylor on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Jason Wheatley, calling from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi, Jason. Go ahead, sir.
I love the show, George, first off.
Thank you.
And real quickly, I got a comment and then two quick questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, the comment I'd like to make was regarding us requiring some kind of artificial protection, such as clothing and such forth, mm-hmm. When basically that's just from, as you would know, years of us living indoors, evolving technologically, coming up with, our vehicles and such, because there's tribes deep in Africa right now which don't use any kind of clothing whatsoever. They run barefoot through the forest. You got all kinds of spikes and whatnots and bugs and everything, which, would provide, which would provide some sort of a discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted to quote on that real quick. I'll get to the questions now. First question would be, as far as, would you have any kind of idea as to how thick the Earth itself might be before the Holocene? And number two, what kind of pressures are you talking inside of the Earth itself?
Mm-hmm. Okay, firstly to your comment, we do actually make note of that, the fact that we are currently out of tune with the environment because we perhaps have evolved into an out-of-tune state. That has been proposed by a few people, and we actually mention that in our book. And I believe that when you are in tune with an environment, there's no reason why you wouldn't stay in tune. But that is a very valid point. And because we didn't mention that, you've definitely picked up on that.
Yeah, such as pigmentation now, of the skin. We're indoors, more often. We're not adapted.
Of course, bone structure, though, if whether you're indoors or outdoors, gravity is the same, and your bone structure wouldn't evolve away from what was ideal in an environment. So in this particular case, whilst there may be a situation where that could be an argument, there's too many other things that go with it as well that can't be explained. So, yes, if we're outdoors a lot more, we can actually improve the pigment in our skin and so on. But really, we don't believe that you would evolve away so much from being in tune in the environment to where we are now. And even if you take, say, native people, they would not survive without their intelligence, and there would have been a period of time before they reached intelligence where they couldn't have had fire or weapons to defend themselves. To get to your first question about the thickness of the shell of the Earth, I think it's somewhere between 300 and 500 kilometres, which was, I can't remember how many
about miles. About 150 miles to about 270 miles.
And the reason for that is for the depth of the deep focus earthquakes that we find, which we believe should be roughly the same depth from the surface as the earthquakes on the outside are here. So if we have that same correlation, then we'd assume that it'd be around about that deep before you actually hit the hollow inside the planet. Now also, too, when we're talking about the pressure differences, your second question, between the two planets, basically, between the inside and outside of the planet. At the moment, the pressure would be equal because the flood has occurred. But before then, the pressure would have been considerably greater. We still would have been able to have life evolving and living, and could probably survive the drop in pressure after the flood. But the pressure would be sufficient enough to sort of force out the entire inside of the ocean to the outside for a period of time while the flood was occurring, and then for it to flow back in. So that we are talking about perhaps not a huge difference in pressure, but certainly over the whole expanse on the inside of the planet, that is certainly adds up to a lot of force that can be exerted on that ocean.
Matthew or Kevin, is the planet in any danger because of the hollowness?
No, it's not, because matter centers around gravity. And if you had a massive impact into the planet and it pushed the surface in, the surface would then come back out to realign with gravity. And we know this by huge craters like the Polaris Basin on Mercury. The floor of that crater is still there, the cracked crust, but it's following the convex curvature of the planet. In other words, after the impact, the surface of the planet returned back to its natural curvature. That is because it rebalanced around gravity. And this is one thing that we were going to say in the interview, we never actually got around to saying, but the floors of craters actually being convex instead of concave is another reason to support the hollow earth theory.
Oh, that's a good point. Now, the book, The Land of No Horizon, how did you come up with that title?
The inside the Earth, there is no horizon like we have on the outside of the Earth. And so that's where it came from. This is the land within, and it's a land without a horizon, so we call it The Land of No Horizon.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast around the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
I'm just curious. You talking about this, you know, water on planets, you know, being hollow. I was wondering, what about the moon? They found water on it recently.
Yes, definitely the moon will be hollow as well.
I'll listen on the radio. Thank you.
Okay. All right, good. Thank you. Go ahead.
What we've discovered is that when a body becomes it gets to a certain size, it will start to become very spherical. And what we've discovered is that when this size is reached, that's when basically the surface effect, it reaches right to the center of the planet, and then all of a sudden the planet can start to become externally dense, and that's the cause of it being completely spherical. So you'll find that when you say, look at the moons on Mars, Phobos and Deimos, they are rocky and they're oddly shaped, and that's because they're only small. But when you get larger, you find that the relative size of the gravitational attraction on the planet and the structure of the actual rock in the making up the planet, you reach a balancing point. When you get to a certain size, it starts to bend and you'll start to get a very spherical body. And of course, as you go further, it will start to become hollow. And the moon is definitely hollow, and as are all bodies the size of the moon and up. But when you get to about 150 kilometres in diameter, that's when you'll start to get bodies that become more oddly shaped, and that would indicate they're not hollow. 80 miles, yes.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
My name is Mike. I'm from Vancouver. I'd like to raise a question to your guest, Kevin. Tesla described the resonance period of the Earth as being an hour and 49 minutes. I wonder how that relates to his whole Earth theory.
I'm having trouble hearing.
I'm having trouble hearing him, too.
Okay, I'll say it again.
I'm having trouble with my phone.
And speak up really loud, would you?
Yep, that's all right.
Tesla expressed a resonance period of an hour and 49 minutes for Earth, and I wonder how that related to the hollow Earth theory.
Yes, what's actually happening here is after an impact or an earthquake, the Earth rings like a bell, and it lasts for an hour and 45 minutes or so. And this is something that's been very difficult to understand in a solid Earth model, and this is why it's been such an interesting point that they keep bringing up. Because if the Earth was solid, we wouldn't expect that the resonating of that impact or that earthquake to be around for such a long period of time. But of course, when we look at this in a hollow Earth model, it makes perfect sense that because it's hollow, the vibrations keep traveling around and around and around until they dissipate. And that is the reason why they last so long. So that's yet another reason why another thing to prove that the Earth is hollow.
Okay, next up, let's go back to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Paul, and I'm listening in Columbus on WTVN AM 610.
Hi,
and
Paul.
I had a question about magnetism. If
sure.
you look at different pieces of iron, it magnetically aligns itself to where the poles were placed at the time that the iron had frozen.
Yes.
And so if you look at the conventional solid Earth theory, the way that this functions is that the iron core magnetizes itself to the pole, and then when it hardens, it stays in that magnetism, and then we find it. And so we see the polar shifts, and I'm wondering exactly how polar shifts work in a hollow Earth theory and how magnetism essentially works in a hollow Earth theory. And I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Yeah, we're not actually sure exactly what's happening with the dynamo theory. And there's a number of different areas of it, and they're trying to explain the magnetism effectively with this theory, but they're having problems with it. Some of the problems are if the Earth is centrally compressed and solid as believed, and it is super hot and intense and in intense pressure, they're not sure if under that intense pressure and heat, if the metal of the core can actually maintain a magnetic alignment. Because we know when we have a molten metal, you can no longer get magnetism from the molten metal because it no longer holds that polarity.
Secondly, as well, in the center of the Earth, where the you're actually in the center of the planet and the mass is evenly distributed around you, there will be no gravity or very little gravity in the center, and so it's very difficult to explain any convection currents that could be causing occurring to cause the magnetism as well. So it's another problem that, that we have. So there's quite a few things there, and I think I haven't researched the changing polarity of the magnetic field, but there's been certainly a lot of research into that on the Earth regarding the plate tectonics and the drifting of the continents, because we know that a continent, when the crust solidifies, it locks in that magnetism, and then when the continent drifts around the Earth, that magnetism then is drifting away from alignment, and we can tell just how far away these continents have drifted.
Matthew, have you ever seen any satellite pictures of the top of the planet, which could depict where the hole is?
I have seen some satellite images, but one particular one that I remember seeing was actually a montage of many different photos of the North Pole. And what they had done is they'd taken photos of the North Pole during the winter time, and they pieced them all together, and it left a big black circle right over the pole. And I remember seeing this as an argument for there being a polar hole. But really all was happening was that this black area at the top of the pole was actually the area which doesn't receive sunlight throughout the winter. And so that was actually, it wasn't a correct case. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other photos or so on that could indicate something such as this. I have heard of also, because of being a hole in the crust and currents running through the North Pole, you can have warm currents bubbling up coming through from the inside, and they can have massive areas of ocean that don't have ice cover because the ice has been pushed away. And then this is one of the things that some of the early explorers in the Arctic have found, that all of a sudden they'll come across a massive area where there's no ice, and they can't explain why there's no ice when everything else is freezing cold. And certainly this could be observed from a satellite photograph. I haven't actually seen any photographs of this. I've just accounts that people have seen these sort of things, but certainly they could be out there.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is John from Buffalo.
Hey, John. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Yes, I was calling to talk about an experience I had with the Hollow Earth, actually.
You did? Okay. Well, what happened?
Well, what it was is I was on an expedition through Greenland. I'm a geologist to study the effects of global warming on ice caps. And when I was in north of Greenland, there's a friendly Eskimo village that actually said that they have a myth about the gate to what they believe is the afterlife there. So we explored this area and found a deep crevice in the ice. And I'm an experienced mountain climber. I explored there, and I went down there, and I was actually I actually encountered beings who I believe live in the Hollow Earth.
What they look like, John?
Well, they were mostly molten. I would say that they were like magma men.
Magma men?
Well, that's the best way I can describe them. I would say that they were molten rock, but I don't know. That's how they appeared to me.
Well, that's strange. All right, Kevin, your take on that?
Well, yes, this is one of those things that perhaps time might sort it out and give us some kind of answers in these areas. It's very hard without actually witnessing this to really say what's happened here, Paul has experienced. But yes, you hear so many things, but it's too hard to really sort of decipher from here what actually took place.
I certainly haven't encountered anything like that in the studies and the research that I've done.
No.
So it's probably one of the first times that we've witnessed something like that.
Not magma. I think if there's going to be a life form, it's going to be, biological compared to what we've got. Very organic, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
And also, like you say, it was molten. That might have been what it appeared to be. And sometimes it may not be quite what you think you're looking at too. It could be some. It could just resemble that.
That's
right
too.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, let's go to maybe time for one more call. West of the Rockies, go ahead.
Hi, this is Mary from Oregon.
Hi.
I'm wondering if the inhabitants of the hollow earth are more fragile than us. They're used to a lighter gravity. How do they handle the G's in the flying saucers?
Right, well, we would suspect that because they're thousands of years ahead of us in their technology, that they can actually influence gravity themselves. And this seems evident when we look at a lot of reported sightings of UFOs. I can remember one just off the top of my head where there was a UFO and someone was seeing it and they picked up a rock and they threw it at the UFO. And instead of it going in a parabola, in an arc, just as it would be through gravity, when it went underneath the UFO, it actually didn't fall. It actually kept going straight until it went past, and then it fell on the other side, to indicate that there was actually some anomaly or some change in the gravity in the area of the ship. And I would suspect as well that if beings were suited to a lower gravity environment, they would need to protect themselves by creating an artificial environment where the gravity was less as well. And I think this is evident as well in some of the abductions that people have reported, being in an environment where the gravity seems less and things tend to float around and that sort of thing. So I don't know whether they would be able to support themselves very easily and not for extended periods of time on the outside, but they definitely would be advanced enough to influence gravity in some way and definitely to their advantage.
Well, both of you, you've done very good work on this one called The Land of No Horizon. You both make us think, I'll tell you that. Thank you so much, both of you, Kevin and Matthew.
Thank you for having us on the show, George. It's been a pleasure. We've really enjoyed ourselves, too.
Yes, definitely.
If I ever get to Australia, you're going to have to show me around, okay?
Yes, no, that's right. For sure.
Okay, you've got a deal on that. That's Kevin and Matthew Taylor. The name of their book is called The Land of No Horizon, and you heard it. They believe that there are inhabitants living within the hollow earth. For Dan Galante, Nikki Imbrunoni, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.